My name's Trevor. I get the occasional chance to coach here, and occasionally I get to share ideas, which I really love doing. It's a lot of fun. I have to start with an interesting story, and it maybe wasn't the story so much as the reaction to it. Typically when you share a family vacation story, you do not get, "That's total bullshit." What? Oh, so you haven't had that experience either. Yes, that was the reaction I got when sharing a vacation story. Let me share the story with you. It was passionate, for sure. We went on a roadie this summer, and in talking to quite a few of you, there was lots of people who went around to sort of see the sights, look around the world, and we went stateside, and we went to South Dakota, the Black Hills of South Dakota. Now, I knew nothing about South Dakota before, but if you want to come talk to me after the service, I'll do South Dakota tourism for you. It was so much fun. And we went to one of the coolest sites, I think, in South Dakota. That's us. Mount Rushmore's in the background. It's amazing. Well, you saw our smiling faces, right? It's an amazing project. What is absolutely stupendous is the artist who, again, I knew nothing about before going, Gustav Borgram. And he's got this beautiful idea. And the idea is that a monument's dimensions should be determined by the importance to the civilization of the events commemorated. So it's a big, big, big project. And Mount Rushmore, 14 and a half years to build this thing. 14 and a half years you're up there slaving on this. And he wanted it to be awesome, and it is. There are four of the U.S. presidents, four of the greatest U.S. presidents, men whose accomplishment has rendered them immortal in stone. And I don't use the word immortal smallly. The mountain erodes 1 inch every 100,000 years. The artist said, "This is going to look exactly how I want when 3 inches have been eroded 300,000 years from now." I was impressed. So it's right near the end of our time at Mount Rushmore, and we happen across one of those rangers, and they're leading a tour. And I'm like, okay, let's hop on. So he takes us right to the base, and he starts sharing some really interesting facts about Mount Rushmore. He said, "You can see in Washington's eye, the drill bit's still there." No, I can't. He said, "It's there." And he said, "It broke off when they were carving it, and they didn't want to pull it out, and they figured it'll rust off in 100 years anyways. So they, we'll leave it there." You notice that Jefferson is actually, rather than looking straight, he's looking up. And the reason for that, when they were carving, they found a fault and said, "No, we can't do that." Roosevelt has his glasses on. I'm like, wow. And Abraham Lincoln, and the artist was a massive fan of Abraham Lincoln is the most detailed figure. Wow. Okay, I'm enraptured, because these little geek details, this is what I love about travel, finding out things that I wouldn't have found out any other way. And then the guide closed with just this most amazing question. He said, "There's a lot of debate about a fifth face, and there is, in fact, room. Martin Luther King Jr. is a really popular choice." He said, "These are men of great vision. They helped create, and they grew a country through troubled times." Then he turned towards our group. He said, "I know many of you are from different countries." He said, "What vision or action could you create in your own country that would cause others to find you worthy to be immortalized in stone?" Initially, I was like, "Wow, great question." And then it almost felt like I was jabbed with a knife. I wasn't his intention, but I haven't done anything that epic. And it got me thinking over even my last few years. I'm not leading any organization. I'm not behind any great social causes. I'm not looking for any great social causes either. I love my Friday afternoons off. I schedule them that way. So looking at this monument, I was suddenly feeling small. So this profound question, and it was a call to greater good. Well, it's exactly that moment as I'm recalling the story that my friend says, that's total bullshit. Okay. But he continued his statement. He said, Americans turn their presidents into gods, crafting them into something they were not. Well, it wasn't the reaction I was expecting when I told it. I didn't get defensive right away either. I sort of stepped back. And actually, I thought he had a point. And it got me thinking, what is a hero? Because that's the root of the question. That's what my friend was so upset about. They'd made these figures into heroes, and he was just questioning, did they have the right to do that? And it had me comparing myself in my head to that image of hero. It's a very lofty title. Like, when we check out the definition, a heroine, a person who's admired or idolized for courage, outstanding achievement, or noble qualities. Example, a war heroine. Okay, we are elevating that into the realm of so few. But keeping it there, who are your heroes? Who are those people who inspire you? Who give you an image of something that you'd like to be? Olympic athletes, they're amazing. The dedication, just 8 years of work for maybe one run, one race. Maybe you have a closer connection to people who've actually founded like a cause. Talking to someone who actually was involved with brown bagging for Calgary's kids. Like, she was on the formation committee. I'm like, that's cool. Maybe there is some political heroes. Nelson Mandela comes to mind. 27 years in prison and then leads his country out. Who inspires you? Maybe it's closer to home. Maybe your parents were a really good example. Maybe your mom, she's a hero to you or a heroine. Maybe your dad. My grandparents, almost every one of them came over with a suitcase from someplace else. That's pretty heroic. Maybe you got a friend, I have two of them, who are battling terrible diseases and still have a sense of humor. Seems pretty heroic to me. What about that person do you admire? You know, the four men on the mountain, the four presidents, they did accomplish some pretty amazing things. Washington's the first president. That's a big deal. It's a lot of work. Thomas Jefferson is the crafter of the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. It's one of the foundation documents for human rights across the planet today. Roosevelt negotiated the construction of the Panama Canal. He cut through a continent. And Lincoln abolished slavery. Those are some big accomplishments. So who are your heroes? Any ideas who this beautiful lady is? I'm serious, guesses. Does anyone know? You'll know her in a moment. I had no idea. Esmond, you want to throw the next one up? Everyone know who that beautiful lady is? Isn't that crazy? Mother Teresa, known in the Catholic Church as St. Teresa of Calcutta. Like, I grew up Catholic, and I grew up hearing about Mother Teresa. She only passed away in 1997. She was the closest thing to a living saint that I knew about. And as a Catholic, a saint is kind of a big deal. Just so you know. And she's one of my heroines. Young lady born in Macedonia, and after living there for 18 years, she moves to India, where she lived her life. Now, I always heard about her work with the poor right from the start. I mean, I remember the pictures of her reaching out and helping the children and the leopards and those who needed their help. But what I learned is she actually didn't found her own order until she was in India for 20 years. So talk about not coming in and saying, oh, I have the solutions. She took 2 decades to figure out the problems. Wow. Is it any wonder you grew up hearing about her? At the time of her death, the Order of Mother Teresa, 4,000 sisters, 600 missions, 120 countries. That's the woman I knew. Or maybe all the good women too. I love this verse from that song. It's a cool song in general, but this verse really sticks with me. We're holding out for something. Gotta be sure, soon. And that line, larger, larger than life. That's the standard. And heroes aren't new. There's heroes in the Bible. Job is one of those characters from the Bible. I want you to just check this out. This is how he's described in sort of the first paragraph of the book of Job. Talk about setting up billing. Lived his name was Job. He was blameless, upright, feared God, shunned evil. He was the greatest man among all the people of the East. He was healthy, wealthy, wise. That's like the first paragraph. Like, talk about setting it up. The challenge is he doesn't stay there. Job has everything taken away from him. His wealth, his health, his family. And then he starts cursing God and he starts cursing life. And he's not blameless anymore either. If you move the story of Job out of the Bible for a moment, I think you get to the heart of my fear around calling anyone a hero. And maybe it's our fear. And that fear seems to be that if we call someone a heroine, what if they fall? I never watched golf on TV until Tiger Woods started playing. And suddenly I find myself watching golf on Sundays. I know, it's shocking. I don't know why I was doing it. But it seemed like Tiger was always in that final group, the group of leaders who were going in the holes. And it's incredible. I remember one of his tournaments in the trees, hitting a shot out of the trees, over the water, onto the green to win the tournament. And it was only a matter of time before Tiger was going to be the greatest golfer ever. Ever. I cheered for Tiger. And suddenly, we hear about a string of like nasty affairs. Ugly, nasty. And his wife learned about him, unfortunately, about the same time as we did, as we hear about an incident of her chasing him, ironically, with a golf club, down the driveway of their house where he crashes. And it was terrible. And golf is a mental game. And this mess, entirely of Tiger's own making, it wrecked him. Tiger was a golf hero for me. I find him reluctant to call anyone a hero, because so many heroes seem to fall. And I risk putting them on a pedestal. I don't think it's going to be able to support him for long. Yeah, it means they're human, but it's crushing. I believed in them. I was cheering for them. I believe they were an example for me. And suddenly we find out they're not who we thought they were. You know my friend who was upset about those presidents? He was onto something. George Washington and Thomas Jefferson were both slave owners. They own people. It's not right. Roosevelt helped organize a revolution to overthrow the government of Panama, to replace it with a government that would allow the construction of the Panama Canal. And Abraham Lincoln might be the most interesting, because the issue of abolishing slavery and the timing of it is still debated today. Today. Did you do it because it was the right thing to do? Or did you do it because he needed the men? Mother Teresa is a controversial figure, was a controversial figure. As a Catholic, I was shocked by this. Because I can think of her, and this is the image I have in my own head. Quotes like, Mother never seemed to get tired or overwhelmed from the amount of poverty in the world. I mean, just listen to this. Mother Teresa often said, had I not picked up the first person in Calcutta, I would have never picked up 42,000. 42,000, like, wow. But there's more. You know, there was a number of scandals on the financial side in Mother Teresa's order while she was running it. And Mother Teresa was ardent on her stance against abortion under any circumstances. Any circumstances. And it said she was mean to her secretary. Job from the Bible. His life turns terrible, and suddenly this blameless, upright, God-fearing man is publicly denouncing God. And Job's friends are watching this, and they struggle with this. They can't get over their fallen hero. He was so good. Does anyone deserve the title of hero? Can anyone earn the title of hero? Can anyone live up to it? Can you be a hero? Can you be a heroine? You know, I asked this question to a friend of mine, and it was lucky that his spouse was there to tell me this story, because even though we run together 3 times a week, and this happened 10 months earlier, I'd never heard this story. His wife says, you know, it's funny you asked that, Trevor. We're at parent-teacher interviews in September. And my husband, as you know, he's a math teacher. And so we go in to see my son's teacher, and she's just got this big smile on her face. She says, Mr. G, I thought that was your son I was teaching in social studies. It's great to see you. It's like, oh, good to see you too. No, no, no. You'd understand. It's great to see you. I was failing math before I had you as a teacher in high school. And you were patient with me. You explained things again and again. You never gave up on me. You knew I could get this. Do you know the only reason I'm a teacher today is because you took the time to do that? I would never even have taken a university math course, let alone passed them, if it wasn't for you. Wow. My friend's spouse said, we didn't talk about my son. 10 minutes of her gushing about my husband and his teaching. But she was meeting a hero that day. She was meeting a hero. Can you be a hero? Yeah. Yeah, you can. I believe you can. There just seems to be a little bit of reluctance about really taking credit for those great moments in our lives. Because we have this idea of a hero who's admired or idolized, and they have to sort of stay there. My friend never told me this awesome story about his inspiring teaching. Like, how cool is that? It's a great story. I'd say it's heroic. But I never heard it. Do you think maybe we just don't want to share? Because it seems like bragging a bit. Or maybe are we more afraid that we know we're going to fall, that I'm so far from perfect. I'm just here for a little bit. Here's a great story in the Bible. There's lots of good stories in the Bible, by the way. This one's a good one. It's called the harvest story. About the time Jesus left the house, sat on a beach, crowd was gathered. They went out in a boat because he really wanted to see everybody. So he addressed him and he told them a story. I love this line. What do you make of this? He said, a farmer planted seeds, and as he scattered the seeds, some fell on the road and birds ate it. Some fell on the gravel and it sprouted quickly, but didn't put down roots. Sun came up, it withered as quickly. And some fell in weeds, As it came up, it was strangled by the weeds. And since some fell on the good earth and produced a harvest beyond the wild imagination. Then he asked the crowd, are you listening? Really listening? Now, I've taken up gardening this year. So I'm learning about weeding and trimming and stuff. Stuff. This group that Jesus was talking to, though, they would have understood gardening far better than me. But it wasn't a tale about gardening at all. And so when Jesus' disciples asked him a bit later, can you kind of break this down for us? Could you share the wisdom? He did. I said, take the farmer for a moment. He's planting seed. And he said, when someone hears the seed, the news of the kingdom, but doesn't take it in, it's just on the surface. Well, someone, the evil one comes along and they pluck it right out. And that's the seed that was scattered on the road. And there's seed that was cast in gravel. That's the person who hears it and instantly responds with enthusiasm. But there's no soil, there's no depth. And so emotions wear off and difficulty arrives. And there's nothing to show for it. And then there's a seed cast in the weeds. It's the person who hears the news, but the weeds of worries and illusions and the challenges of life strangle it out. And nothing comes of it. And then the seed cast on the good earth is the person who hears it and then produces a harvest beyond wildest imagining. Now, if I could pick, I always want to be the good seed. It seems that D seems to be the right answer to that question. I mean, don't we all want to be the good seed? Like, that seems great. But the challenge is that's just not the case in life near enough. I mean, would a good seed build a calendar to ensure his Friday afternoons are not touched by other people? Not able to help anyone that way. Shouldn't a good seed be helping the poor in the streets of India? I don't even have plans to travel to India, so I'm not sure that that's going where I want. And can you be a hero in any ways? You know, something Jeff said recently has helped me better understand this story. Jeff talked about how fleeting accomplishments can be. They can do something great, and within a moment, you're thinking of the next thing. So if you think of the question asked, can you be a heroine forever? I don't think I can. I don't think I can be a hero forever. I don't think I can stand on a pedestal, not even for very long. You know, looking at that story through that lens, I'm each of the seeds. Maybe most of my life will be spent in ignorance. I will just miss the needs in Calgary right around me. Maybe a few causes will wear me down before I'll push and I'll step back. I've had it happen. Maybe life's worries will distract me again and again from what I want to do. And I will fall. We will fall. Occasionally, though, we're going to get to stand on a pedestal. September 2011, Calgary Board of Education had two liaisons running the meeting, and they said, we're closing your school. We live blocks away from the school. My son's in grade 3 at the time. It's another 3 years that he's not going to get to just walk there. I didn't want to see him lose that. We're in a little community in Montgomery. I think we were growing, but the Calgary Board of Education didn't see it that way. And there's a challenge with this type of meeting, when you're at it in September. You don't get these meetings unless a decision's been made. They were just telling us. Or so they thought. Because I didn't accept it. And I got in contact right away with the only school that ever was not closed after it got this far in the process. And I found out exactly what their game plan had been, and I grabbed it. We got the media involved. We had lots of meetings with our trustees. We organized meetings of other parents. We met, came up with peaceful and appropriate protests, and we were out in force at every meeting in numbers. We were vocal, not often disrespectful, and we pushed back really hard. I got this letter from a parent. And it said in fall of that year, your school's staying open. We won. And I am damn proud of that moment. It's a pedestal moment. It's a good seed yielding a big crop. That school is still thriving today. But that's not always me. Hell, that's not often me. I fall. I yell at my son. Okay, it's frustrating. He has a headset on. It's the fourth time I've told him it's dinner, but I lost it. I told my mom, nope, I'm not giving you a drive to the airport. Nope. You know, the woman who gave birth to me and raised me, but I wasn't taking her to give her a ride to the airport. And I don't water my garden enough. Now, that's small, but I have a garden mentor who's generously given me his time, and I still haven't watered, and that's all, by the way, this week. You know, I like my comforts. They certainly seem to take first place. I don't often want to inconvenience me. And I could say I'm the rocky soil, the soil with weeds. But I go back to, can you be a heroine? Yes. I'm going to say even more than just I believe you can. I believe you are. At times. At times. When I accept I'm imperfect, that I will make mistakes, that I will hurt people, and yet there can still be moments that we can make a difference in the world. And that's embracing all of me. You know, Tom, a few weeks back, he talked about our shadow selves. And that's those parts of our lives that we don't want anyone to know about. Like no one. And I totally agree with Tom. Because my shadow self, it's not something I want to brag about. Ever. Shadow's part of me. I'd like you to consider, though, for a moment, in order to have shadows, you need light. You need light. That as imperfect as I am, as we are, we have light within us. There is light that is a part of us, and we can be in our heroes. If you've ever looked at this thought before, I want you to think about it through fresh eyes today. Our deepest fear is not that we are inadequate. Our deepest fear is that we are powerful beyond measure. It is our light, not our darkness, that frightens us. We ask ourselves, who am I to be brilliant, gorgeous, talented, fabulous? Actually, who are you not to be? You are a child of God. Your playing small does not serve the world. There is nothing light enlightened about shrinking so others won't feel insecure around you. We are meant to shine as children do. We're born to manifest the glory of God that's within us. It's not just in some of us. It's in everyone. And as we let our light shine, we unconsciously give other people permission to do the same. And we're liberated from our own fear. Our presence automatically liberates others. This is an invitation. We are all heroes. We're imperfect because we're human. But we're heroes. Falling is a part of life. My shadows, stuff I'd rather not talk about, I'm not proud of, it's part of life too. And so is the light. Those moments that we all have when we get it right, when we do it right, they're amazing. Have something to be proud of. Marianne Williamson's passes, it's an invitation to accept that part and to show it and to do something amazing. Encourage others to do the same. We end in prayer sometimes. I'd like to end with one of my favorite prayers. I've got to tell you, the wisdom of these words, they astound me. And this is from one of those imperfect heroes we talked about, the one that was mean to her secretary. I used to pray that God would feed the hungry or do this or that, but now I pray that he will guide me to do whatever I'm supposed to do, what I can do. I used to pray for answers, but now I'm praying for strength. I used to believe that prayer changes things, but now I know prayer changes us, and we change things. Mother Teresa. Go out there this week. Let your light shine. Have a great week, everyone.